Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. One of your favorite Seek Reality guests over the past 4 years has been Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson. He's also the most famous person I've ever interviewed. In the field of afterlife studies, Gary Schwartz is a rock star. We never know what to expect with him, so unlike everyone else that I interview, I can't do much prep beforehand. No matter what I plan to talk about, we generally end up talking about whatever's on his mind at the moment. In fact, soon after Liberating Jesus was first published, Gary ended up interviewing me. That was fun. As all of this might suggest, Gary Schwartz in person is really delightful. Like all the best scientists, he has a childlike wonder and delight in the things he is learning. He's friendly and he's funny. He's one of my favorite people. So I'm very happy to have him with us today. Welcome, Gary. I am so glad you're here.
Roberta, you're impossible. You know that.
We do have fun. That's the most important
thing. We do have
fun.
We do have fun, and you embarrass me. And by the way, because we're having a synchronicity right this second.
Oh, no, I knew this would happen. Yes. What is it?
And I'm going to tell you. And since one of the topics that I thought we could talk about today was my new book that's coming out called Super Synchronicity, since you made the synchronicity, I'm going to share it briefly with you and your audience. Because
wow.
It helps explain what a synchronicity is.
Oh, perfect.
And,
go ahead.
and then also, just other topics that we can address, although we will go with the flow, include Rana's new book, a new edition of Love Eternal, and I'll share with you some new evidence verifying members of the team of collaborators that work with on the Soul Phone. And then we can talk about the Soul Phone and the Soul Phone Foundation, and anything else you would like to.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
So let's now start with the synchronicity
first, and then we'll just. Okay.
Okay. So first of all, what is the definition of a super synchronicity? What I call a super synchronicity is when you have six or more events that are in close proximity to each other, which are extremely rare. Almost, you know, so they hardly ever occur, and now they're occurring in a sequence. And when you have six or more of them, they become typically astronomically improbable, meaning the probability of they're occurring by chance is minuscule. So why am I smiling here? I'm just giggling here. So here's the story. In my advanced health psychology class at the University of Arizona, and this was last Thursday, we were talking about what we call dimensions of an enlightening understanding system, or DEOS. And these are 12 dimensions for sort of understanding any topic or challenge or content area. And that's not important. What is important is I asked the students if they had any questions about any topics that they thought might not fit within that. And one student raised her hand, and she said, well, what about the topic of evocation? And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, evocation is like when you evoke a feeling of something in the past. So I said, could you give me an example? So she says, well, sure, let's consider you're having a peanut butter sandwich and it reminds you of being at home. Now, in all the years that I've been teaching students, people don't talk about peanut butter sandwiches.
No.
And I didn't even know why she picked it. So I asked her. And she said, I don't know. She said, it just sort of popped into my head. So I asked her, I said, do you typically talk about peanut butter sandwiches? She said, no. And I said, well, gee, that's very odd. And then
right.
Another student who's sitting, so that's of course, I didn't know it was a synchronicity. It was just odd. Then a woman sitting in the front row says, gee, that's curious. She said, you know, I haven't had a peanut butter sandwich in over a year. And this morning I happened to have a peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, isn't that funny?
And I said, gee, that's odd. And I said, well, gee, why did you eat it? And so on. And she said, well, it just happened. And then another student said, she said, gee, that's really interesting. She said, last night I made my son a peanut butter sandwich, and I cut it in the shape of a five-pointed star. And she said, my son liked it so much that I then made a second peanut butter sandwich for him for breakfast, also cut out of a star. And I said to her, I said, how often do you feed your son two peanut butter sandwiches in a row in a meal? And she said, this never happened before. And that started the peanut butter sandwich, peanut synchronicities, of which I then had a total of 11. Now, I don't want to spend
the whole
time. We take a long time to go to the peanut butter sandwich, and they're not important. But that was the turning point when she talked about cutting them into a star. By the way, the next student, just to tell you, raised her hand, and she says, well, you know, I eat a peanut butter sandwich every day.
Oh,
said, what?
Golly.
And, you know, how many students eat a peanut butter sandwich every day? It turns out she eats them for health reasons, because under the right circumstances, they could be healthy. So now, why am I sharing this, besides the fact that it's an amusing example of when synchronicities can build up? And, of course, at the time, we don't have no idea what they mean. The reason is because she talked about making peanut butter sandwiches into a star. And the word star caught my attention. And what did you call me in the introductory remark, which most people don't
star.
Do? You call me a rock star of this field.
And that just popped into my head, so I don't know where it came from.
Exactly. Because it just popped into your head, because it was spontaneous, it's like this woman spontaneously saying, well, let's consider how a peanut butter sandwich reminds you, evokes the feelings of being at home. She spontaneously said peanut butter sandwich, and then this person spontaneously has a peanut butter sandwich. And then the next person spontaneously makes her son two peanut butter sandwiches back to back, but she cuts them out in the shape of a star. It's those spontaneous moments when you sort of are in the flow, implying that there's some higher process, some greater organizing consciousness, a universal mind, a great spirit, you know, what some people call God, Larry Dossey calls the one mind, and so on, that may be playing a behind-the-scenes role in facilitating connections among all of us to the extent that we're open to seeing it. So you
Our minds
just...
are part of, yes, one mind. That's exactly right. Our minds are part of one mind, and that's the only thing that exists. And that's a wonderful, actually, explanation of why synchronicities are something we should notice, because the more we notice, the more we're going to understand that.
But let's go back just a step, Gary, and reintroduce you to people just briefly, because there probably are a few people who are new and they don't understand who you are and why you're so important. So tell us a little bit about how you got started. You're a scientist who was trained in all the best universities, right? You have a very traditional background.
That's correct. And also I was trained, if you would, to be anti-spiritual. So I was brought up in an atheist home, essentially, an a-religious atheist home. And I was raised by Western science, which is materialistic and doesn't believe in it as a field, doesn't believe in any kind of a greater spiritual reality. I was formally started out in electrical engineering and graduated as a psychology major, chemistry minor at Cornell. I did my PhD in psychology, specializing in what's called psychophysiology, the relationship between mind and body, at Harvard. And then I was on the faculty at Harvard. Then I moved and I was a professor at Yale University for 12 years, and then moved to the University of Arizona, where I have this long title, professor of psychology, medicine, neurology, psychiatry, and surgery, and director of the Laboratory for Advances in Consciousness and Health. And please don't hold that all that against me. It's just
right.
It's just part of my background.
Right. That's who you are.
But I, so to speak, I began to question some of the core assumptions that Western science makes. Initially, when I was a professor at Yale, partly because of my fascination with the nature of light and its relationship, for example, to energy and consciousness, and that coupled with meeting some very special people who were grieving the loss of loved ones and wanted to know if there was a way to scientifically prove whether their loved ones were still here, I began to secretly do some research on the question of life after death, because it turned out that work that I had been doing actually provided a theoretical foundation for the possibility that all that and more might be true. So I started out, you know, doing, I was a mainstream, you know, well-accepted scientist. And then discoveries, you know, forced me to reconsider my prior assumptions.
And you were good enough, wise enough, and strong enough to be able to do that, which most, unfortunately, most scientists are not. Very few. Because I hear from scientists who say that personally they agree with the stuff I'm saying, but they, if they say it, it'll destroy their careers, and you didn't care. Bless your heart.
Well, I cared a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't want to be out on the street.
Food is good, right?
Seriously, I don't want to be on the street, and I do want to be able to make contributions. But I was blessed, and synchronicity is one of the ways that I come to the conclusion that the work that I'm doing and collaboratively, obviously, with many other people is in service to the greater universe, to the greater reality, as you would put it, and so therefore I've received a lot of assistance.
Yes,
and
yes.
I was blessed. Partly because of my education and partly because of the gift of my own ability to think and to, you know, problem solve, I was able to do things that I think many scientists wouldn't be able to do. Now, yes, did it take courage? You know, of course. And as I explained to people who are interested, at the university, I live with a sword of Damocles hanging over my head.
I have to
be very, very careful about what I do and what I say in order to hold on to this privileged position of being a senior tenured professor working in these very controversial areas.
Wow. Well, good for you that you can toe that line, because I've seen your new laboratory, which you let me tour in January, is amazing, and you have a wonderful position there, even despite all you've done so far. So you must be doing well in terms of towing the right line. Good for you.
Thank you.
Let's talk. Well, I was just going to say, let's talk about the afterlife experiments. Whenever I talk about you, I always mention that book first of all. I don't know if you think it's the best thing you've ever done, but what this book did for me was to take someone who, to the day I read that book, I thought all mediums were charlatans, because I'd never had a good reading, and I'd paid a lot of money for a lot of readings as I was trying to figure out whether they were real. I was convinced they weren't real. Then I read the afterlife experiments, and anyone listening who doesn't believe mediums are actually in communication with the dead needs to read this book. So tell us how that got started. How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. How the work got started or how the book got written?
How did you start doing the research that was necessary to write that book?
Well, it's again, partly good fortune. So, for example, I met a woman by the name of Susie Smith, who was retired, living in Tucson. She was, I think, 85 years old at the time that I met her. She had published then a total of 29 books in the field of parapsychology and life after death. And because because of Susie and meeting her, I was able to meet someone who herself believed that she was a medium, although she didn't typically use that term. But she was believed that she'd been in communication with her mother for over 40 years. She claimed that she was in communication with Professor William James from Harvard. I mean, she made a lot of claims, but she was a serious science-minded person, and she published books that were evidence-based, where she reviewed the best science of her day. In fact, she even had a little foundation called the Survival Research Foundation to attempt to support research in this area. So
that's
I was
wonderful.
Blessed to be in the presence of people who could give me both guidance and inspiration. By the way, Susie became my adopted grandmother. She used to call me her illegitimate grandson.
I remember that
saying,
story.
Yep, she couldn't wait to die so she could prove that she was still here.
What a character. This is how people get when they do this work. We become so convinced that it's real that we really can't wait to see it for ourselves. So let's just quickly talk about what the conclusions were, because
sure.
That's what stunned me. You ended up with results against chance of like 1,000 to 1 or 1,000,000 to 1, very, very long odds against
exactly.
What you got being real.
Well, just to finish up with the Susie story, it was because of meeting people like Susie that I actually had the opportunity to then investigate mediums. Because most, you know, how do you find a medium, and how do you find a medium that's evidential, and how do you find a medium that's gifted? I mean, you just can't put an ad in the newspaper.
Right.
So part of my ability to do this work was, I said, good fortune in meeting mediums, and also, as I describe in the Afterlife Experiments book, because I started secretly working with two mediums, and then the word sort of got out. The people from HBO came to see me, Lisa Jackson, who's doing a documentary for HBO, which ultimately became the Life After Life documentary. And they were interested in mediumship research, and I essentially talked them into funding an experiment where they brought five mediums to the University of Arizona, four of whom I had never met before, I'm sorry, to actually test whether mediums could do get accurate information under controlled conditions. And so it was, again, partly because of that, and they filmed this, and this was actually made up about 10 minutes of a documentary, which is now available on YouTube, or if you go to my website, you can actually see the segments that features our laboratory. And anyway, so I ended up having the good fortune of meeting multiple mediums who wanted to prove that they were real, and they were interested in advancing the field, and that was critically important. Anyway, the conclusion that I was forced to, as a result of these experiments, which ruled out all the fraud explanations, all what's called hot reading and cold reading, it ruled out rater bias, it ruled out experimenter bias. I mean, we did a whole series of ever more complex experiments, which are carefully, you know, described, and the journey described in that book. I was forced to the conclusion by the totality of the evidence that some mediums were real. And not only were they real, meaning that they weren't frauds and cold readers and so on, but that the most parsimonious explanation that accounted for the largest amount of the data, i.e., the best explanation that fit the largest amount of the information, was actually that they were communicating with the deceased. Now, it wasn't
yes.
definitive proof, but it was so strong that not only did I have to continue doing research in the area, but it also provided for many people hope.
I have to say that I was such a skeptic. I started reading it and I was very skeptical, but the detail of the efforts you made to try to make sure double drop blind, triple blind, nobody knows who anybody else is. Nobody can foresee how they'll be paired up. I mean, you were compulsive about keeping all kinds of bias out of it and making every other possible explanation just evaporate. That anybody who is skeptical about mediums ought to read this book. You owe it to
Thank
yourself.
You. You know, in some respects, it's certainly the most research-detailed books of any book that I've written. You know how people say the devil's in the details?
Oh,
well,
yes.
Well, the deceased are on the details, too. And the divine is in the details as well.
Absolutely.
As the Super Synchronicity book illustrates.
No, it's a very impressive book. But now let's talk about the soul phone. I'd say 10%, I get a lot of emails, but at least 10% of them ask some question that's a variant of, so when will we get a soul phone? Or what about the soul phone? People don't understand there are other ways to communicate than the soul phone. So I just sort of use it as a summary of all the new developments in electronic communication that will let people talk directly with their dead loved ones pretty easily in a few years. And you're one of the two researchers that I follow closely. So maybe you could summarize what it is you're doing.
Sure.
and where we, then we'll talk about where we are now.
Okay. That's obviously something deep to my, really deep in my heart. It really matters to me. First of all, let me preface this by saying that if anyone's interested in the soul phone and becoming involved with its manifestation, there's a new website that was created by Dr. Mark Pitstick and Robert Staritz. It's called the Soul Phone Foundation. You can go to the soulphonefoundation.org or simply soulphone.org. And it provides a lot of detail about the history of the soul phone and where we are in the research and what's needed and so on. And first of all, there's an explanation of how we use the term soul phone, which is not necessarily the same as the few other individuals who are doing very creative work in this area. We refer to the soul phone as an integrative, evidence-based technology for spirit communication. And the key phrase here is integrative, evidence-based technology. Now, what do we mean by integrative? Well, you know, in our contemporary smartphones, smartphone is much more than just a phone. It's an integrative technology. It includes texting. It includes audio, like a phone. It includes video and still images. And it includes audio-video. So it's got a lot of different technologies, which are all packaged within one technology. And the soul phone concept is also an integrative evidence-based technology in that all of those modalities we predict are going to become available in the years to come based on the substantial proof of concept research that we have been doing, some of which has been published in peer-reviewed scientific journals, that shows that the detection of spirit can be scientifically documented, including using state-of-the-art double-blind procedures and statistical analyses, the kinds of things that you need in order to justify the existence that you know something is real. And we've in the laboratory we've actually explored now 9 different possible technologies. There are certain technologies that already are really promising. I mean, again, the metaphor, you've heard me say this before, the metaphor is, I call it a Wright brothers moment. Anybody who knows
Yes.
the work that we've done knows that just as at Kitty Hawk, that fateful day, you know, 5 people saw a plane fly, and the first flight lasted 12 seconds, and the longest flight was 59 seconds. It was totally impractical. And it wasn't reliable, but they then knew that flight was possible. And what
it's possible.
Then took were visionaries who could see the big picture and then would go from what's called proof of concept, which is what they proved, to then an actual technology that you and I would want to fly in and which we now take for granted. Well, we're past Kitty Hawk now.
Right.
The plane has taken off, but it's not reliable enough to be used as a useful communication. So one of our technologies, which we call a pulsed light technology, and I won't bore you with the details here. this technology is about 70% reliable now.
Wow.
Now, 70% is wonderful, okay?
But
you can't use it as an accurate procedure, even as a simple switch. You don't want a switch that works 70% of the time.
Right.
You want a switch that works 99% of the time. And the question is, what will it take to go from 70% to 99%? And we, based on everything that we've done, our conclusion is that that it's only funding that is preventing us from producing the breakthrough moment, which is the 99% reliable spirit switch. And that we think that within 1 year of the time that we raised the necessary funding, that there's I put it at least a 90% chance that the breakthrough will occur. Now, when I say 90%, of course, that's extraordinarily high. However, the 10% that it won't work is a real 10%. So I'm not guaranteeing it, but I am saying that based on all of the data, all of the evidence, the total patterns of the findings, we know that it's only money that and engineering time that is preventing us from taking it to that level. And so that's the challenge that we have. Now, once we have a yes-no switch, we then can do 20 questions. And by using a 20-question paradigm, people can not only identify their loved ones, but also they will then be able to ask certain questions where yes and no answers will be manifest. Now, imagine that we had the 20-questions yes-no paradigm fully functional. From that, it's only another year or two before we go from a soul switch to a soul keyboard. And the keyboard is just a bunch of switches, of course, about 30-some-odd binary switches, and now you have a keyboard. And once you have a keyboard, you have soul text. And once you have soul text, you've got something that billions of people use every day.
Right.
So the implications of this are profound. Now, what will take longer, and it's more expensive, is what we call soul audio and also soul video. However, we've done and proof of concept work with each of those. And in a keynote address that I gave at the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies last December, I gave a lecture about what's called transformative science and the soul phone project, and pretty close to the title, but that's the topic. And people can watch that video, which is on the homepage of the soulphone.org. And they will see how far this research has gone. So, as you can imagine, I'm fully committed to seeing this happen. I wish I was 42 years old or 52 years old as opposed to 72 years old. So, the fact is, you know, we need this technology yesterday. Not just because we want to connect with our loved ones, but more importantly, this is what's going to prove to people that there is a greater spiritual reality. And also, we can then be in contact with luminaries, wise people who were very special beings when they were here in the physical, and who all the available evidence indicates they want to continue to be able to help us and give us guidance if we're willing to listen.
So tell us, who are the people you're working with? Because this is stunning to me.
Okay, well, first of all, let me set the stage for this conversation. And I introduce this with the following words that came out of my mouth, and which Rhonda, who works with the team, Rhonda Schwartz, and other mediums, and I prefer. And the statement is, it's not about the team. It's about the technology. I repeat, it's not about the team. It's about the technology. Because what happens is that when people hear about the team, they get so interested in the team, or they find the team so disbelieving.
Right.
They forget about the seriousness of the work and the collaboration that's involved. So it's not about the team, it's about the technology. But having said that, who's on the team? And what I can share, and let me first of all also preface this by saying that we have kept this information a secret for most of this time. And part of the reason is because we wanted to have sufficient evidence to be able to prove that they were part of the team. And also, we didn't want their identity to distract people from the importance of the work, okay? Now, in Rhonda's new addition to her book, Love Eternal, which is just being published, she's added a chapter, chapter 28, which reveals who the A-team, or many of the members of the A-team are. And then in my afterword, I provide some further evidence of that. And then I can also share that there is going to be a news cover story in a journal that's open, a magazine that's open to this kind of work. And you can imagine the kind of magazine that would be open to this kind of work, like something like Psychic News, you know, something that is paranormal or spiritual. But they're doing a cover story about the current status, and they also will be revealing the identity of the team, some of the members of the team. So let me share with you some of them, who they are. First of all, some of them are leading scientists of their day, and they include, and I know it's hard for people to, you know, imagine this, but it includes Albert Einstein and David Bohm and Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison and Sir James Clerk Maxwell and Maxwell Planck and others. Now, of course, you immediately say this, and some people, your eyes roll. I mean, you sort of, you have a hard time grasping this. But here's the truth, and that is, if our deceased children, who are really not deceased, but we call them deceased, or our deceased parents or spouses can be alive and well on the other side and care about us as individuals, then it's absolutely rational that people who were exceptionally gifted in when they were here in the physical, and whose love and caring for humanity doesn't stop just because they leave their bodies, that they would not want to participate as well. And I talk about a little that in that whole concept in the previous book called The Sacred Promise. So first of all, there are these scientists. Secondly, there are lay people. I mean, people that you wouldn't know about, such as Susie Smith, even though she had ended up publishing a total of 30 books before she passed, just prior to the age of 90. Or Rhonda's mother, Marcia Eklund, where after she died, that's what inspired Rhonda in this area, because she began receiving communication from her transition mother, which was so evidential, she was forced to the conclusion that at least with her mother, she could do what John Edward did in terms of, and other mediums like Suzanne Northrup or Suzanne Giesman or whatever, receiving accurate information. And then there are other kinds of famous people who were cared about this topic when they were alive, either overtly or covertly. So, for example, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who was even a spiritualist, or Harry Houdini, who, as you know, the great escape artist and magician. And he very much wanted to believe in life after death, but he spent much of his time exposing the fraudulent physical mediums of his day. And they're actively involved in the research. Probably someone who's more, you know, contemporary, definitely more contemporary, but also somewhat more controversial, is the gifted singer and dancer and composer and lyricist and so on, who is Michael Jackson. And one of the things that we learned was that Michael Jackson actually learned about the Afterlife Experiments book and other afterlife research that I was doing about 6 months before he died. And through a surgeon, who then contacted me, who also has a radio show, he actually requested and received those materials, and then he passed away. So Michael had a secret interest in this before he died. And, you know, he wrote songs like Earth Song about what we were doing to the planet. And he wrote Heal the World, co-wrote Heal the World and so on. I mean, he really cared about ecology. He cared about the
future
of children.
Actually, yes.
What?
He cared about people. I think that's one of the things we're really only learning now, because he was so famous his whole life long, he really couldn't be out and open in the world with people. But he was a very loving man. I want to make sure, we're going to continue to talk, but I want to make sure people know that if you'd like to meet Gary, and he's more fun in person even than he is on the radio, you need to come to the Afterlife Research and Education Symposium, September 15 to 17, 2017, in Scottsdale. Just go to afterlifestudies.org. That's afterlifestudies.org. Or you can even phone them, 800-690-4232, and sign up. And I'll be there, and Gary will be there. And frankly, be there or be square, because we're going to be talking about such cutting-edge things that if you're not there, you're going to really miss something. I hope to see you there. But now, Gary, you're continuing with the soul phone work, right? That's your primary area of interest now.
Sure.
Do you have any idea of time frame for something that maybe people can look forward to?
The answer is yes. The next step is for us to be able to raise the level of funding needed to go from proof of concept to working prototype of the pulse light paradigm. And that is described on the Soul Phone Foundation website that Dr. Pitstick and Mr. Staritz have were inspired to create. And you know, it's really challenging mainstream people, a TV producer who will remain anonymous right now, who's also a secret medium, evidential medium. In an email just this morning to me, he referred to these people as muggles, you know, from the Harry Potter.
Right.
And so, quote, the muggles are not going to be people who are going to see the value of this and, quote, fund this work. So it's going to have to come from all of us who care. And there are two groups that I think are particularly, who might be particularly inspired to do this. One, of course, are people who have lost children or spouses or parents and would love to be able to connect with them and would like to participate in the funding of something. Because remember, from the time we get this funding, within a year or sooner, we will know whether we've made the breakthrough or it'll need to continue. And as I said, my conservative estimate is 90% probable that we will have the breakthrough. So the 10% that it won't work is a real 10%. But I mean, that's always in any kind of development work. You're taking a chance. But the second group are people who are grandparents and who love their grandchildren and would love to be able to remain part of their grandchildren's lives after they transition and go to the greater reality. So in honor of their connecting with their grandchildren, they can help contribute to the soul phone, which in turn will again. So in other words, there's motivation for those of us who are missing people here, as well as those of us who are getting closer to transitioning to the other side and want to stay connected.
Gary, we're going to have you back, because this is, in fact, in 3 months, it's a date. I want to want you to come back and talk about more about this, because we've come to the end of our time. Thank you so much for being with us. And again, anybody who is interested in meeting Gary in person, go to afterlifestudies.org. And do you have a website that you'd like to send them to?
Sure. Besides going to the soulphone.org foundation, if they go to drgaryschwartz.com, drgaryschwartz.com, but it's drgaryschwartz.com. They'll see some of the things that I'm involved with.
That's great. Thank you so much for being here, dear. And we're going to have a conversation much sooner than 3 months from now, just you and I. You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. And I'm thrilled you've been with us today. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And that's the most important thing you can learn right now to transform your life. Next week, we'll be talking with Joyce Stewart. She's one of the few people who are working in the same field I'm in now, which is trying to understand how we can most fulfill our need to grow spiritually in this lifetime. Her book, God is Love, is beautiful. Please join us next week. We've been talking with Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson. He is, I think, one of the most interesting people now working as a scientist today. Once he succeeds at what he's doing, and the others also who are working in this field, where there's going to be a literal renaissance of knowledge and, frankly, peace and joy over all the world. This is beautiful, beautiful work. I hope that you will join us next week. I want you to know how important you are to me. And if you have any questions or comments, robertagrimes.com. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.